This brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found. Please be seated. Grace breaks down our sensible notions of fairness and propriety to reveal an abundance of love. Ian Morgan Cron, who was our guest at the forum a few months ago, describes an experience of unrelenting resentment he had with a former friend who had betrayed him. Though they hadn't spoken in years, that person remained stuck in the craw of his imagination for the years that had passed. He writes, "For years, whenever this person's name came to mind, my blood boiled and I felt like choking the cat. Countless nights, I lay in bed and fantasized about the butt kicking I wanted to give this guy for the suffering he had caused me. While sitting at traffic lights, I mentally rehearsed the scorching rebuke I'd one day give him, forgetting to notice that the light had turned green until the person behind me leaned on their horn." Ian's showdown, well rehearsed though it may have been, never happened, because it turns out the guy had been dead for 10 years. This is a picture of what a broken relationship looks like. A betrayal, a break in something that once was whole, cascading into an infinite pool of bitterness and resentment. The parable of the prodigal son is also a picture of what a broken family looks like. But this story is also abundant good news, because it shows us what God imagines for human life, for relationships, for families, for whole communities. Bishop Michael Curry wrote this about the prodigal son, and in fact, he wrote it in a commentary about this, and he wove it into the hymn that we just sang, "There's a Wideness in God's Mercy." He wrote, "We are made by God to be in loving relationship, in harmony, and in communion with God, with each other, and with all of creation. It is God's dream to renew, reconcile, repair, and restore all of creation. That is the magnetic power in the parable of the prodigal son pulling the prodigal back home." Do you get that same sense that there is a magnetism that draws the son back that is stronger than any sense of shame that he may feel as he's heaped upon himself? And that is one of the key parts of this story. It is drawing him back to the garden, back to paradise. Paradise, my friends, it is not a place, but it is a state of harmony. Whenever I feel the pain of separation, whether through broken relationships, or fractured families, or divided cultures, whenever I feel that, I am reminded that this is the pain of being outside the garden. This is the pain of having somehow putting ourselves, or at least thinking that we have put ourselves, outside the circle of reconciliation, outside these relationships of goodness and love that are precisely what God created us to have and precisely what God imagines for each and every one of us. And to understand this story, to begin to turn back towards home, to even have a hope of rebonding this holy family back together again, we have to come to face with one core truth. The kingdom of God does not make much sense. Indeed, the kingdom of God is kind of ridiculous. The Father's love, what he does, it displays a depth of grace that is absurd to us. It defies conventional wisdom and cultural propriety. In the conventional wisdom of the scribes, the ones that corner him because he's there eating with tax collectors and sinners, right? What do they say? Morality, it's probably not so much about right actions as it is about right people and the choices that they make. And if someone chose an immoral path, well, they were choosing to be on the outside, right? That's their choice. They could not comprehend. And by they, I think the gospel is actually saying most of us, most of the time, cannot comprehend what a sinner is in the eyes of God. They saw tax collectors and sinners, of course, as those who are kind of on the outside, but really, at best, as a cautionary tale, as a warning of what not to do. Jesus saw them through an entirely different lens, through that of a kingdom that makes no sense. The scribes had it backwards. The broken folks are who this kingdom is all about. The reign of God is all about the recovery of the lost. This is the third parable in a row that is exactly about precisely that. First, you have the parable of the lost coin, which in our modern era would be parable of the lost car keys or the lost iPhone. The parable of the lost sheep. And then here, the prodigal son, which is kind of the parable of the lost soul. With the added curveball is that the lost soul you think is the person we're worried about actually finds his way back home just fine. And it's the older brother, the self-righteous one, that by being so resentful is at the most danger of becoming lost. And the Father's response is, let's just go ahead and say it. It's kind of ridiculous. It is worthy of ridicule. Can you just hear the mutterings of the townsfolk, the neighbors? In first century Palestine, the wayward son lined up every single thing you are not supposed to do, and then he did them one by one by one by one. You are not supposed to get an advance on your inheritance. You are not supposed to shame the family with your behavior. You are not supposed to spend down your family's wealth, their future prospects. Draw all that together, and the shame is expressed perfectly as the young man wallows with the swine. Remember, this is a Jewish culture. It doesn't get any worse than this. He makes himself even lower than the unclean animals. Now, when someone chooses to put himself beyond the pale, we tend to let him do it. Cultures need that to keep their integrity, right? You can't have a system of morality and then just let folk run all over it and do whatever they want. Look, guys, these sinners, they made their bed and they need to lie in it. Sound familiar? Perhaps the most beautiful, the most nonsensical, the most ridiculous thing the Father does is this. I mean, besides welcoming his son back. I mean, he probably thought his son was dead. And when you think about that, any one of us may have done the exact same thing when that's your reality. But instead of welcoming him back, he instead of just explaining to the neighbors what he had done, right? Send like a a group chat email to the text thread of all the neighbors. What? He throws a party. He lets joy tell the story. You know what? It's downright crafty. I'd call it manipulative in all the best sense. Because what does he do? He throws a party so all of these gossiping neighbors have no choice but to show up. And when they get there, what are they going to do? Just sort of be grumpy in the corner, you know, hover by the punch bowl? No, they're gonna have to get involved and come in and let themselves go and just let go of whatever ideas they had about what is proper and what is right, and just enjoy the presence, the return of the Son. The Father had no interest in judgment. His love for his fallen Son was the baseline of everything he did. His heart broke for his Son, and he couldn't imagine letting him wallow in those toxic puddles of shame. Because we all know that doesn't ever work. Now, while we're on the subject of toxic puddles, let's turn to the other brother. His response is judgment without compassion or love. He sees it as an issue of fairness. And I think the more I read it, I realize he is hurt. He got hurt by this. But then he lets his resentment get the better of him, which means a dangerous flirtation with staying outside the circle of reconciliation, of choosing to stay outside, of not allowing himself to be invited and welcomed back in by the Father, who only knows one thing, which is, how do I reach out of the circle and pull both of my fallen sons back in here so that we can be a family together again? But I think about the older brother and I see him hurt, and I think a lot of us can relate. His argument is sound. There is a fairness issue, he says. And why on earth should we reward my brother with a party, Dad, when I have been faithfully doing my duty as your son? We check your bottom line. We are a lot poorer because of him. And what are you doing now? You're killing the fatted calf. That's income. That's our livelihood. Spending us down even further. He's not wrong. This is not fair. But grace calls us to take a hard look at fairness. Think for a minute about those things in your life that is not fair. Fairness can be a motivation for change and for justice. It can also be a bulwark against it. Fairness is awfully subjective, especially if it overlooks unspoken inequities. Now, in this case, a fair response would have been perfectly appropriate, but it would have sabotaged grace. What's more, and here's where we are all in danger. His righteousness, or rather self-righteousness, allows him to water the seeds of resentment. You can just see him there, right? Steaming, angry. Quoting Bill Wilson of Alcoholics Anonymous, Ian Cron writes, "A person mired in resentment has little chance of recovering from their addictions." Resentment is a feeling of bitter indignation at having been treated unfairly. Resentment and brushed aside anger will corrode your life, which is why Jesus confronts it directly. I think it would help the older brother, who we can see him stoking those coals of resentment, I think it would help him not to think that the brother is right and that he is wrong, because I just don't think that's true, nor that what's happening is actually fair, because he's absolutely right, it is not fair. But instead, I think it would help him to know that his father is not and will never make sense to him until it would help him to realize that his father does not and will never make sense to him until he is finally willing to trade in his judgment and his anger for forgiveness and love. Let's be honest. That makes no sense. Not in the world that we have been raised in, not in the reality that we spend our lives moving towards. For those of us who know a little something about surviving in this world, that's just crazy talk. But that is the whole point of this parable. Love does not make sense. Or rather, love has a logic all its own if we give ourselves over to it. I assure you, the father in this parable was not erratic or unfair or capricious. He had not lost his mind. He is simply acting purely out of compassion and love. And this is what it looks like when we act out of unconditional, abundant, reconciling love. And when that is at the heart of who we are and everything we do, I assure you, this makes all the sense in the world. This kind of love is what heals our hearts and restores our world. And here, my friends, is the really good news. We don't have to understand it or even fully agree with it. The Son has returned. He has come back from the dead. And the Father's only response is to embrace him and throw a party. Our job is simply to show up.